The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. It's my pleasure to welcome to the program today Lori Hertzel. She joins us on the telephone in St. Paul, Minnesota. Welcome to the program, Lori.
Thank you. It is so nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, I had to have you on, Lori, because I've been your secret admirer for many years. I used to read you regularly because you reviewed a lot of books in the paper up there. And I loved reading your stuff. And then when I heard you'd written a memoir, I had to talk to you about it. Your memoir just came out. It's called Ghosts of Fourth Street, My Family, A Death, and the Hills of Duluth. What led you to write this particular book?
Well, the book is, it's about growing up in Duluth, and it essentially covers 2 years of my life when I was a small child, maybe the years I was 8 and 9. And that was the time that when my oldest brother died in an accident. I'm number 7 of 10 kids. There's 3 younger than I am, my poor parents. And I was kind of at that age when he died where I knew, you know, I could observe what was going on and I knew intellectually what was happening. But as a 9-year-old, I did not have full emotions, and it did not really strike me in an emotional way until I turned 18, which was the age my brother was when he died. And it's just something that I have thought about and have written about for a big part of my life. I started writing about his death when I was in high school, sort of trying to make sense of it. As a family, we didn't really talk about it. It was maybe too hard to talk about. So I was sort of left to grapple with understanding it by myself through writing. And it just, the book was never really planned as a book. I started writing memories of my childhood years ago and posting them on a blog. And when I was in grad school working on my MFA, I kind of pulled all of this together and started working on it as a book. So it came about sort of in bits and pieces, almost by accident.
Mm. Your oldest sibling, his name was Bobby. Sounds like he was a very artistic kind of guy. He sounds like he had a poetic soul. Tell us about him.
Yes, his actual name was John Patrick. But if you read the book, you know that names are pretty important in the book and that everyone had sort of alternate names. We called our parents Trish and Gov rather than Mom and Dad. My father gave all of us nicknames, and John Patrick's nickname was Bobby, and we called him that for his whole life. We only started calling him John Patrick, you know, after he had died. He was the oldest. There were 5 kids between him and me, so I wasn't close to him. Not a lot of 18-year-olds are, you know, hang out with their 9-year-old sisters. But he and I were kind of similar in that we both wore glasses. We were the only ones. We both read a lot. He was a writer. He had a typewriter, and he wrote poetry. He didn't care about school at all, which was a big problem for my parents because my father was a university professor and, you know, he expected us all to go to college. And Bobby, you know, school was not of interest to him. He did not do well in high school. He worked on the literary magazine and he walked at night a lot and came home and wrote poetry, you know, at midnight, like 18-year-olds do. Right. Mm-hmm. And he was a very gentle person. My father grew up in a pretty contentious home in Missouri. My grandmother was a very argumentative person, and they used to fight all the time, argue, my father and his mother. And that was kind of the way that my father learned to parent. And so when, you know, Bobby is coming along, he tries to fight with Bobby. Bobby wouldn't fight him. Bobby would just stand there and listen. He had no interest in arguing. He wanted to go walk the streets of Duluth and write his poetry.
Your dad was a writer as well. Mm-hmm. And we get the sense, reading your memoir, that writing was very, very important to him. And that somehow he gave you that gene.
Mm-hmm. It's true. He was a, like I said, he was an English professor. His specialty was 20th century American literature, a big fan of Hemingway and Fitzgerald. And but he also did a lot of kind of magazine. It was journalism, I guess. I mean, it was reported pieces. He wrote for The Nation and he wrote for Catholic Digest. And then for many years, 40 years, he was a contributing editor to North American Review. And he would travel around and report on things like the nuclear power plant that was coming online in Monticello, Minnesota. And he wrote about foosball and he wrote about all kinds of really interesting things. Mm. The Great River Road that goes from, you know, Minnesota down to New Orleans. So that was something that he was, it was very much a part of who he was. And he would read his pieces out loud sometimes to the family. And, you know, most of the family would just sort of kind of tiptoe away, you know, they didn't want to sit and listen. But I was interested, and I just saw that as, you know, something that I too wanted to do. So in some, I mean, I'm not an argumentative person. We were not alike as far as our temperament goes, but as far as what interested us and kind of motivated us, it was reading and writing. And Bobby too. I think the three of us in some ways were quite similar.
As readers, we discover that a lot of your story in this book is about the relationship between your parents. And tell us about your mom. This is kind of a classic 1960s marriage, isn't it?
It really was. My parents, I would say, were overwhelmed by the number of children they had and, you know, the lack of money. My parents are both from St. Joseph, Missouri, and my mother hated it there. It was just a pokey, hot little town, and she wanted to get out of there. And she married my father when she was 19 years old. Her oldest brother, her only brother, had died in the war, and her parents had moved away. They were grief-stricken. I mean, this whole theme of, you know, young, unexpected deaths kind of courses through their lives. And so she had nowhere to go. And she married my father. He was just back from the war. I think he was 21. He was going to college on the GI Bill in Quincy, Illinois. And so they moved to Quincy together, and she just, you know, started having babies. My father had been raised Catholic, and that's what happens when you're Catholic, and it's, you know, the 1950s. I guess it was the 40s even when my oldest brother was born. So when they moved to Duluth, I was three, and she was a stay-at-home mom. She did not like being a stay-at-home mom. She had other aspirations. She was a very smart woman, very well-read, but not educated. But my father would call home every day at noon and ask what was in the mail that day, and she would tell him, and then he would tell her what he wanted for dinner. Mm-hmm. And she would go to the store, the grocery store, and she would buy the ingredients that she needed and come home. And she would spend the rest of the afternoon, you know, cooking these feasts, these amazing feasts for 12 people, because there were, you know, 10 of us kids and then my folks. So this was not a happy life for her. She became much happier after we had all moved away and she could start doing other things. She started working and my folks started traveling and she was happier then. But while I was growing up, she was pretty unfulfilled, and it made her a very quiet person. My father was, you know, he was very talkative. He was a writer. He was a storyteller. We learned all of these stories about his family. Some of them are funny, ghost stories. You know, I wouldn't put ghosts in the title if there weren't actual ghosts in the book. My grandparents' house was haunted. And he would tell us all of these stories. My mother never told us any stories. Just to find out that her brother had died in the war, you kind of had to drag these things out of her. So they were sort of the yin and yang to each other, I think.
And heaven forbid if one of the children was not present for dinner.
Oh, my gosh, no. And that's the other thing. I think because they were so overwhelmed, when they moved to Duluth, they didn't know anyone. They didn't have family in Minnesota. The family was all back in Missouri. They had no support system. It was the two of them and then all of us kids. And so my father, he tried to keep the family together or keep things organized by rules, rules, rules. And if you read this book, there are so many rules. Mm. You couldn't watch TV in the daytime, and you couldn't watch TV during dinner. You couldn't answer the phone during dinner. Dinner was a sacrosanct time when it was the one time of day, he said, when the whole family gets together and sits down for a meal and we talk about our day. And that's great in theory, but as kids grow up and they get involved in things with school and they have friends and they want to do things in the evening, there was a lot of friction there. And Bobby he was in plays at high school, and theater performance was at the same time as dinner. So he had to pick, and, he did not pick dinner. So, yeah, right. There was a lot of problems there.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Book Nook. My guest is Lori Herzl. Her book is Ghosts of Forest Street, My Family, A Death in the Hills of Duluth. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, community-owned public radio for curious listeners. This book really resonated with me. There's a reason why they call it the baby boom. My family had some similarities with your family. Catholics, lots of kids. Mm-hmm. My mother was raised Methodist, and when she married my dad, it was back in the day when if you're marrying a Catholic, especially a man, you had to convert. So she very begrudgingly became a Catholic, and then we'd all go to church, and my dad would sit out in the parking lot and listen to the radio and smoke cigarettes while my poor mother sat in there and listened to the boring Monsignor do his sermons, and she just hated it. And
that's so unfair.
Yeah, and this whole thing with Catholicism, your family, your parents weren't that devout either, were they?
No, my mother also had to convert. And I remember she was very resentful of this. And she said that the reason that she was given was if one of her children wanted to become a priest or a nun, they would not be able to if she hadn't converted, because the children would be seen as illegitimate.
No.
So that's what she told me. My mother also told a lot of stories that may or may not be true. So there are stories in the book. It is a book about family stories as well. The death is part of the book, but it's not the main part.
Uh-huh.
And the stories that she told were few and far between, and I do not know how accurate they were. I will just be upfront there, because she was a very private person, perhaps even secretive, and it may be that she made things up. But anyway, that was what she told me, the reason why she had to convert. And my older siblings all went to Catholic schools and had First Communion. Bobby was an altar boy. But that was when we lived kind of in the sphere of influence of my grandmother, my Irish Catholic grandmother, who, kind of controlled everything. When we made the break and moved up to Minnesota, all of that ended. So I never got the lovely lacy dress and the crown of flowers. I felt really unhappy about that. I should have gotten that too, but we didn't go to church, and so the only time of year we went to church was when my grandmother came to town, and then we all had to scramble to try to find clean clothes and pretend like we knew what we were doing when we were sitting through the service.
I have a lot of favorite parts of your memoir, and you just reminded me of one, and it's when you'd go down to Missouri. And there were these ladies that lived across the way, and you'd spend time with them.
Yes. Yeah, Sylvie and Hazel. It's funny because that scene, that comes from the summer that we lived with my grandparents. I was 2.5 years old. My mother was pregnant with twins. So there were 7 kids plus twins on the way. My father had lost his job. So we all moved back to Missouri from Louisville, where I was born, and moved in with my grandparents. My grandmother and my mother hated each other. It was not a great time for the adults. The kids had a wonderful time, except that the house was haunted. And I, you know, it was too much for me. I've always been an introvert, even amongst family members. And I used to sneak out the back door and go across the alley and visit Sylvia and Hazel, who were actually my grandmother's cousins. I thought of them as my aunts, but they were not, you know, quite aunts exactly. And they were two sisters who lived in this boarding house. They ran the boarding house. And they were so kind to me. And I would go into their house and sit on the bench in the front hallway and wait for them to find me. And I was perfectly happy there. It was quiet. It was clean. It was orderly. There was no strife. You know, there weren't 9 other kids, you know. Mm. And they would find me. And one of them would braid my hair and tie my shoes and send me into the kitchen, and then I would make cookies with the other one. And it was a really, really happy time for me. And when I was working on the book, I thought, you know, I was 2.5. Is it possible I really remember this accurately? Or, you know, am I making this up? And I wrote that all down, and I sent it to my aunt, my father's sister, who read it, and she was amazed. She said, this is exactly what the place was like. And she added a few details that I had not recalled, like the Bakelite radio, and, you know, I wouldn't have known what that was. But but essentially, you know, and I had Sylvia and Hazel mixed up.
Yeah.
One of them was skinny, one of them was fat. She's like, no, you've got them. So I, you know, she corrected me, but that was something that really imprinted on me, this calm house of caring and love and quiet. I loved the quiet.
They were nurturing you. And there were so many of you up in Duluth. Another very poignant part in the story is where you talk about how sometimes you would stay downstairs and you would pretend that you'd fallen asleep, mm-hmm. hoping that mm-hmm. maybe your dad would pick you up and carry you up to your bed.
Yep. Yeah. There was not a lot of... there was no physical affection in our house. There were no hugs. There was no, you know, parents spontaneously, you know, kissing your head or, you know, there was none of that. My parents were overwhelmed. There were too many of us. They were stressed out all the time, just trying to get through the day. And I mean, as a child, I wanted my mother's attention. I used to follow my mother around the house, you know, trying to get her alone and talk to her. And she really did not have the time for that. But there was one time when I fell asleep on the couch and my father carried me upstairs, and I woke up halfway up the stairs and I just thought, I'm just going to close my eyes again, because it was so wonderful, you know, to be held and carried and, you know, put in bed, and I always hoped it would happen again, but I don't think it ever did. I don't remember it ever happening again.
We don't find out. We know your brother died from the very beginning, but we don't find out until we get to the end of the book what happened to him. And I'm not going to give that away because I think readers want to earn it. But
okay,
it's so darn tragic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was only 18. He was 2 weeks past his 18th birthday. And, you know, even though he had not done well in school, and he, you know, my father said, you know, you either go to school, college, or you get a job, or you're just going to have to move out. I mean, he was just like, rules, rules, rules. And then my brother died. And, I mean, it was a horrible thing. But I think the guilt that my parents felt, because they had been pretty hard on him, trying to, you know, I mean, I think their intentions were good. They were trying to raise him and, you know, get him in line and, you know, make sure that he had a future and all those things. But Bobby was not that kind of person. He was, like you said, a sort of a dreamer and a drifter and a poet. And, you know, after he died, it was terrible. And I was 9. And like I said, not really a fully formed human at that point. And I remember just thinking over and over again, I wonder when things are going to get back to normal. I wonder when things are going to get back to normal. But, you know, after something like that happens, things do not get back to normal. You know, they move on, but they don't get back to normal.
Near the end of the book, you talk about how you've been writing about, you've kind of been working this stuff out in your mind. You've been writing mm-hmm. stuff, and you wrote an essay about your brother dying, and your mom mm-hmm. was still living, and she read it.
My mother lived to be quite old. She died 1 month before her 97th birthday. And like I said, she was a private person, and she kind of pushed a lot of her kids away as she got older. The three younger ones lived close to her and took care of her and took her grocery shopping and to the doctor and all of those things. And she kind of pushed everyone else away. And she was not happy that I was writing these little stories about family. And even though it wasn't a book yet by any stretch of my imagination, but I did publish the chapters in this book in a slightly different form in a literary magazine. And did not dream that she would ever find it, but somebody found it and showed it to her, which seemed very cruel to me that, you know, here's an essay about your son dying. But she read it, and she was absolutely livid. She was furious with me. And she never spoke to me again. That was about 5 years before she died, and she only lived 10 minutes away from me, and I would email her. She was deaf and couldn't use the phone, but I would email her and, you know, can I come visit? And she would either ignore me or she would write back, no, just no. There was no other discussion. And so that was hard at the time because I kept thinking she would relent or change her mind or, you know, but she never did. So the last 5 years of her life, I had no communication with her.
Does it help you at all from a therapeutic aspect to have written about it and to kind of be processing this?
About that part of it?
Any of it.
Any of it? Yeah. Well, now that is a very good question because I certainly did not write any of this, you know, for the purpose of therapy. I don't do that. I wrote it because it had been on my mind, you know, my brother's death and our life surrounding that for, you know, most of my life. Like I said, he was a poet, and after he died, my father collected some of his poems and had them published in a very beautiful book, just, you know, self-published 100 copies, but just exquisitely done with a letterpress and really heavy cream paper. It was gorgeous. And my original plan had been to include some of those poems fully in this book because I wanted people to know him and know, you know, what a genius he was. His poems were wonderful. And, you know, in the end, I did not have permission to use the poem. So there's just a line here and a line there. But my purpose of writing this was, you know, I had a lot of reasons for writing it. One was to sort of capture that summer that we lived in Missouri and I used to visit Sylvia and Hazel. And part of it was to preserve the memory of my brother and his poems. Therapy was not on my mind, but I will say that since finishing the book and having it published, I do not think about that time the way I used to. It's sort of like I'm moving on from there. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a good thing.
Gotcha. Lori Herzl joins us. We're talking about Ghosts of Forest Street, My Family, A Death, and the Hills of Duluth. She joins us on the telephone in St. Paul, Minnesota. And I'm wondering, Lori, how you became a book reviewer. What's the story?
Well, if you read my other memoir, I wrote a memoir in 2010 called News to Me, Adventures of an Accidental Journalist, about how I fell into journalism completely by accident. And I fell into everything completely by accident. And book reviewing was part of that. When I worked at the Duluth News Tribune, in my 20s and early 30s, I used to write book reviews just because I wanted to. And we had room in one of our Sunday sections for book reviews, but we always just took reviews off the wire. Uh-huh. And I thought, well, this would be fun. You know, then I can get free books. And those reviews were terrible. I did not know what I was doing. And but, you know, it was, I was practicing on the page, I think. And then I moved from there to the Twin Cities, and I was a senior editor at Minnesota Monthly Magazine. And again, I was just really drawn to things literary. And I excerpted books that were coming out and interviewed authors and did that sort of thing. When I moved over to the Star Tribune, I thought, well, you know, maybe I can do some of that here. But that did not work out. It was big paper, and you were kind of locked into whatever you were hired to do, right? And I was editing in the Metro section. And then our books editor, who was a venerable guy who'd been the books editor for almost 20 years, Dave Wood, he prepared to retire. And he came up to me, and he said he thought I would be good in his job. And I was like, I didn't even know he knew who I was. So I applied for his job, and I didn't get it. So I kept doing my other stuff. And then whoever got his job quit, and I applied for the job again, and I didn't get it. And so I thought, okay, fine, it's not in the cards. And then that person quit, and I thought, no way am I going to apply for this job again. And it was then that the editor came to me and asked me if I wanted the job. So I got it by chance. I fell into it, and I didn't do a lot of book reviewing myself the first couple years. I commissioned freelancers because I felt like I didn't know what I was doing, and I needed to really study, you know, what it is a book review should be and how other people do it. And so I sort of gradually started reviewing books. And then after I retired, I've been reviewing for the Washington Post and the LA Times and the Boston Globe and other places. So it's something I've grown to love.
Well, I appreciate what you've written, the things I've read by you. I've really enjoyed. My guest has been Lori Herzl. Her book is Ghosts of 4th Street, My Family, A Death, and the Hills of Duluth. And before I let you go, I just want to talk for a moment. I'm a freelancer for the Cox, Ohio papers. I reviewed your book, as you know. The newspaper world has really been hemorrhaging book reviewers these last 15, 20 years, haven't they? Do you feel any optimism about the book business these days?
Well, the reviewing has just completely gone away. I mean, when the Post killed Book World, that was a huge blow to so many people. Because, as you know, it's a symbiotic relationship, right? The newspaper reviews a book, the book gets attention, the bookstores get business, the publishers, you know, can then publish more books. And without the newspapers in there, it's a big piece missing. So what I'm finding with this book is that it's radio. I mean, I've been doing a lot of radio, and I'm very grateful. I mean, radio all over the country, and podcasts and that sort of thing. And I hope that that can step in and fill that gap, because there needs to be a way for people to know about new books and decide for themselves, as you do with a book review, whether or not you want to buy it or read it. You know, it's it's not promotional, but it's informational. So I'm hoping that something like this will fill that gap, but I'm not sure. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, Lori, it's really been a pleasure having you on the program. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been very fun. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to The Book Nook. My guest has been Lori Herzl. Her book is Ghosts of 4th Street, My Family, A Death, and The Hills of Duluth. Thanks for listening.